Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 21. Today we ask, what's the skinny on bacon? Is a paleo low-carb diet still optimal once disease strikes? And are you goal-oriented? Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 21. I am Relentless Roger here with Dr. Colin Chant, the Caveman Doctor. What's going on?
Busy as ever, of course.
I feel like that's your consistent,
I know, right?
Consistent opening. I think maybe we should splice together all of the opening lines from the last 20 episodes, and it might read very much the same.
I apologize. It's getting very monotonous. But everything's good. I'm wearing my compression gear right now as we speak.
Two.
With the mic, it's actually under my chin because the compression gear rides up pretty high. Anyway, things are good. Another hilarious interview encounter, and I've not told you about this. But so I get back last night, and I was a couple hours south for an interview. Flew in. Awesome, awesome place, awesome time. Very famous breast oncologist, and a couple other guys take me out to dinner the first night. And the guy orders, they had venison and some kind of fish, and he orders that. And he's kind of like, yeah, you got to go with it. You got to go with the venison. So I'm like, all right, so we order that. So we start talking. This is a very famous guy. I mean, you know, I read about him all the time. And so we start chatting, and he's paleo. He does CrossFit. He's like telling me about all the stuff he does. Yeah, he has chickens in his backyard. I'm like, man, you are like my idol.
He's got pastured chickens?
Yeah. Like, you are the father figure at work. It was great. And got up the next day, went and gave my talk first thing in the morning. And my talk's always, I give the same talk everywhere I go on a ketogenic diet. It's very thorough. I've given it so many times, I think I can give it in my sleep. I'm always still nervous to give it. Goes really well. The people there are very into it. They're asking me all these questions. Get a question. Have you heard of the China study?
Oh,
no joke.
Everywhere you go.
So I was like, again with the China stuff. Like, I said that out loud. I'm like, again with it. Are you vegan? He's like, vegetarian. So I went on and on about it. And I'm like, T. Colin Campbell, I just presented an hour of randomized trials, lab data, like all these just airtight studies, these animal studies, which, you know, aren't as good as human study. And again with the China study, it's unbelievable the traction that freaking thing has gotten.
You know what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to alter your presentation, and you're going to have to throw in the triumphant closing of your presentation is, and what about the China study?
Yeah.
And just preempt that whole
discussion. I said, you know, this guy's an adamant animal rights activist, et cetera. I was like, which is totally fine. But the premise of my presentation is for advancing health. And it kind of like stopped there. I think I looked a little bit like a joke. And I actually told him a story about the interview or the interviewer. Yep. So they all laughed. But it was amazing. And later on, I interviewed again with the paleo doc there. So it was all good.
That's great. But, well, it's a better story than the last time, right?
Yeah,
this time it was a paleo doc. Last time it was a vegan doc.
Yeah.
It was a vegan or vegetarian.
It was a vegan doc.
The minimum. Yeah, vegan doc.
The other great thing is I walk out of the room and this guy comes up. He's the basically the department manager.
Yeah.
And he's like, caveman doctor.
Oh, very nice. Like, what?
It's like, I lost 40 pounds on a low-carb diet. I've been doing it for 3 years. He's like, people are crazy. They don't understand how easy it is. And all these other people around her, and they started talking. So I was like, all right, this is pretty much the best interview I've ever had.
Well, this is all right.
So that was awesome.
So, hey, in that context, you can take the China study comments,
I'll take the
right?
China. And the guy that I responded to was actually very nice. He's like, yeah, I just wonder what you thought about it. Like, okay, that's fine.
Sounds good,
anyway,
man.
So, yeah, that's my latest and
congrats on another interview checked off of your list. Yeah. I feel like you've been, you know, basically flying out before every episode and then coming back to the next podcast.
Never ends. I fly out again tomorrow.
Wow.
So,
well,
never ends. Anyway, enough of me complaining. What's up with you?
not too much. It's Transformation World as usual. Both transformation programs are rolling along. Some people are checking in with some great results, which is always really nice to see. Two quick notes. We mentioned this last time, but this Friday, Fat Burning Man Show, my interview with Abel James goes up.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to hearing how that turned out. I never really know how these things turn out until they come out. It's the hour just flies by, and then I have no idea.
They're painful to listen to.
Yeah, I don't.
So I stopped.
I listened. I think the first couple episodes we did, I listened to, and then I just stopped.
Now, I hate hearing myself.
That's one thing. So that's Friday. It comes out. The other thing, I just want to give a quick shout out. Our Relentless Squad went out to the Unite Fitness Decathlon last weekend. And it's, you know, I encourage everyone. There are so many great races out there nowadays that fit more within the world of, you know, health than ever before. It's not just pounding pavement for 13.1 or 26.2. Now you can find these races all over the place that test your strength and then keep the running to a 5K or at least a 10K tops. And I like those a lot better. I think that's a great test of all around fitness. So the decathlon race was 10 strength challenges followed by a 10K that traversed some natural terrain rather than pavement. So it looked pretty cool. But anyway, two trainers from here, Ross and Jess, Relentless Ross and Jess, went out with two of our awesome clients, Jason and Bob, and the Relentless team won. And
nice.
Ross took first in men's overall and second overall. So a lady won it. He took second overall. Jason took fifth. Jess took seventh.
Wow. So congrats. That's awesome.
Congrats to the whole Relentless squad. And obviously, top of the list is Ross taking down the men's side of the decathlon.
It's amazing.
So, congrats, hey, Ross. The takeaway there, aside from the congratulations, is wherever you are, just if you do have that competitive spirit, but maybe you shy away from some of the longer races because of some of the health implications and the training protocol, find this stuff. I mean, this just popped up this year. I know a couple years ago it was the Metro Dash around here, but these races that are challenging the way you move your body. And as we'll get to later today, your body weight to power ratio.
Good stuff.
We ready to begin?
Yeah, we have a juicy topic to start off with. So why don't you lead us?
All right. So I think we would both agree that there was a topic that we heard about more than any other this past week. And it seems to be one, especially within the paleo community, that is a lightning rod for, I guess, both positive and negative feedback. And that is bacon. So, or as some people call it, meat candy. So, bacon. I got kind of fired up about this week. I really wanted to dig into this topic because there's so much going on. So anyway, let's give the preface. So what started this, what started all this bacon hubbub? And last week on the podcast, we briefly mentioned it. It started as us saying, don't go nuts on nuts, right? Limit your consumption of nuts. And then we briefly touched on bacon. You know, Dr. Champ, you mentioned how you had eaten the whole pack, but that sometimes it leaves you almost too satisfied and you find yourself not being able to fit other things into your diet. So that kicked it off. Then Chris Kresser, who is awesome, he runs... Basically, Chris Kresser, Medicine for the 21st Century, we'll link to him. Chris Kresser's an awesome dude. I've met him a few times, and he wrote a great article called The Nitrate and Nitrite Myth, Another Reason Not to Fear Bacon. So Chris, Dr. Kresser digs into nitrates and nitrites and why you shouldn't necessarily be concerned about them. And then we started to get all these people saying, hey, did you read this? What do you think? Hey, did you read this? Maybe another reason to consume bacon. And I said, all right, enough.
No.
let's dig into this and let's look at bacon from all angles right now. And I'll offer my take and my conclusion. And Dr. Champ, I'm going to ask you to do the same. So here's the deal. Dr. Kresser comes out with this article and one quote from his article is this. When it comes to food, vegetables are the primary source of nitrites. On average, about 93% of the nitrites we get from food come from vegetables. It may shock you to learn that one serving of arugula, two servings of butter lettuce, and four servings of celery or beets all have more nitrite than 467 hot dogs. And your own saliva has more nitrites than all of them. So before you eliminate cured meats from your diet, you might want to address your celery intake and try not to swallow so frequently. Obviously very tongue-in-cheek, but I think it drives the point home. So my first question was, when I wanted to dig into bacon, is I wanted to define for our listeners, what is a nitrate or nitrite? Because honestly, when I was thinking about it, I thought of some people I know that may say, hey, I try to buy the nitrate-free bacon. But if I pressed them and said, well, why or what is a nitrate? I'm not confident that I'd get an accurate response. So first of all, nitrates and nitrites are preservatives added to processed meats for basically two purposes. Purpose number one is to preserve meat color because it is cooked a little bit. Otherwise, it would come out gray, right? So it preserves meat color. Number two, it inhibits botulism. So it inhibits poisoning you via bacteria. Those are the two reasons, two of the predominant reasons why a nitrate or nitrite is added to a cured meat, all right? So now that we got that out of the way, what I want to say is this. The nitrate and nitrite issue, or as Chris Kresser puts it, a myth, I'm just going to leave that alone. I'm just going to kind of step away from that and say, hey, it was an interesting article. I enjoyed reading it. Maybe there's something to it. Maybe we don't have to worry about that at all. But does that mean that bacon is good? And I'd argue maybe not. So I wanted to boil it down to a couple topics. And number one was what we alluded to, and Dr. Champ, you alluded to on during last episode. And that is, bacon is very energy dense, very satiating, and it can be a domino food. It's very easy to consume a lot of bacon, right? If you cooked up a bunch of it, it's very easy to come back and munch on another piece of it and then another piece of it. And so it can end up pushing some other things out of your diet.
But it leaves you pretty full.
Yes, it does. So there is a positive to that as well, right?
Yeah, but if you're trying to fit in a bunch of other nutrients, maybe positive or negative, depending on how you look at it.
Exactly. So I'm looking at it actually more from the potentially negative aspect of it, where if someone were to cook up...
You're a negative guy, so it's fine.
But if someone were to cook up a whole bunch of bacon, it'd be very easy to kind of leave your breakfast at that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's number one. Number two, and this is my personal biggest concern, is the quality of the meat source itself. Where is your bacon coming from, right? So for this, I actually reached out to another article, two people who I really appreciate in this community, Dallas and Melissa Hartwig from Whole Nine Life, and they did their bacon manifesto. And I pulled some quotes from their bacon manifesto. The vast majority, more than 90%, based on 2007 data, of the pork sold in the U.S. today comes from factory farm systems, right? That's not good. Mm-hmm. Residues that accumulate as a result of the factory farming system, such as those from pesticides, feed additives, and antibiotics, are often fat soluble. This means these compounds are stored in the animal's fatty tissues. And when we consume the fat from these animals, we are also ingesting these toxins. These residues can be hazardous to humans and is dose dependent. The more you consume, the greater the potential risk. Bacon is one of the fattiest cuts of pork, which means bacon from the factory farming system contains a large potential dose of these unhealthy residues. All right, so quality is my personal biggest concern when it comes to bacon.
Huge, huge point. Good point.
And then a final concern, and I'm going to say this is more minor, is it just bacon? It's kind of like coffee. Do you drink coffee or do you drink coffee with cream and sugar? And with bacon, there are some times where you see maple bacon or, you know, whatever, insert the buzzword. Now, I say minor concern because it's not usually a ton of sugar, but it can be a little bit. Right? It can be more, you know, potentially more than just bacon. So those are my three bullet points. And in order, let me put it like this. Number one, the quality of the meat source. Number two, the fact that it can push other things out of your diet and be so satisfying that you're left wanting elsewhere. And then number three, the final minor concern, is it just bacon? Some bacons come sugared up. So I'm going to make my conclusions and I'm going to pass this on to you for some back and forth. So remember, I'm the tangible guy, right? I like to make this stuff usable and give people takeaways. And
I don't make stuff usable.
No. I'm not saying that. But my goal is to respect the science, take the science into account, and then pair it with information that's very applicable to my clients, right? So from my experience, many bacon eaters are sourcing lower quality bacon, or they can be sourcing lower quality bacon. I've seen it before. And they're stoked about it. It's like, hey, I had a whole thing of bacon for breakfast today. But when you see where it comes from, that might not be such a positive. So all bacon is not created equal, right?
The Costco 500 slice pack.
Right. Not necessarily a good thing. So here's my thing. I totally respect Chris Kresser's article. Maybe nitrates and nitrites aren't such a big deal. But until a worthwhile analysis comes out and says that factory farm bacon is good for you, then I have to hold my ground here. I'd rather offer up a recommendation to most people to steer clear or at least cut down your intake and then make exceptions for others. I'd rather do it that way. I'd rather say, hey, limit bacon intake, but if someone's willing to go above and beyond and source super quality bacon and consume it reasonably and fit all your other stuff in, I say, go for it.
Yeah.
Right. And then finally, full disclosure, I do consider myself one of those people. I source top-notch bacon, and I would say on average, I'm having 2 thick cut slices of bacon with my breakfast 3 or 4 days a week. So that's my own personal. I'm getting top of the line bacon. I'm consuming 2 thick cut slices 3 or 4 mornings a week. Done and done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think the quality thing is a big point. I mean, if you go to the store, the best quality stuff is usually the same stuff that's nitrite free. So True. They kind of run parallel, and that's kind of what you're hitting on. You know, the other thing too, with it, he discusses about how nitrites in vegetables, et cetera. And a lot of times celery salt's used, which is a nitrite source as well. So yeah, I agree. I think it was a great article, and, you know, he's, I haven't met him personally. I mean, I've seen him in Ancestral Health. Seems like a very nice guy. My only issues, and you know, this is a gray area. So the big thing here is look at the overall picture. So once again, bacon with nitrites, maybe it's not ideal, but is it better than grains? Well, yeah, of course. So, you know, you gotta look at everything with a risk reward. The other thing is maybe nitrite's a risk. Maybe it's not. Does that mean I'm going to buy better sourced bacon because of it? Yeah, actually, that's for me, I'm slightly psychotic. I have to do these little things to make myself feel better. So I'm totally fine doing that. And, you know, if it means the animals are more ethically raised, of course, you know, I like animals. I like to eat them, but I want them raised ethically. My couple issues, he says maybe nitrates are even good for you. I had a little bit of an issue with that. I mean, I do the same thing in my articles. Then you start piecing together to try to find every little positive thing towards it. And he says, you know, they turn into nitric oxide, and this can dilate vessels and be an antioxidant, et cetera. Yeah, that's fine. There's also a lot of data now that it can cause cancer. And this is, once again, all epidemiologic, petri dish type data. But it may increase angiogenesis, which is the vessels that are made from cancer cells. So I think it's a wash saying that it's healthy for you. My other issue is maybe it's healthy for you in the vegetable form, but you guys out there know how Roger and I think. And to say that adding factory processed additives may be beneficial for you, I'm going to say probably not, because I don't see them being beneficial any other time. None that I could think of, you know, but even the vitamin studies, you know, a lot of these antioxidant studies, these factory produced substances are not the same. So to say they're from vegetables are fine, then maybe that makes sense. But to add them in, that's a tough sell for me. But that's fine. It doesn't discredit the whole article. It's just a little part. And then he also talks about trichinosis and how it may be a good thing that it decreases trichinosis and infection. I think that's a good point. If you're getting, I don't know what the actual risk is. Trichinosis is a it's not a bacteria. It's a parasite. I'm fairly certain I have trichinosis just swimming around in my brain as we speak. I've had a crazy headache for like a month.
So should you maybe go grab some nitrate?
I think so. Well, it's too late now. It's already in there. And, you know, it comes from, it's in like bear meat is the one thing it's in. It's in a lot of wild game. And most people think that the biblical anti-pork reference is because of this, because they saw about the health effects.
Okay.
Not to comment on a religious thing or whatnot. But, yeah, so that's another interesting point that I think he makes a good point. I don't know what the actual risk is. Once again, if it's a good sourced bacon from a place where they're not feeding the pigs, other ground up pigs, then it might be safe. And, I'm going to link 2 articles here about the link between nitric oxide and colon cancer coming from, my alma mater. There's an MIT article on it. And then I have another review article there as well. It's not a scare tactic, just to make you think that you got to look at the overall picture, and everything's a risk return. So
sounds good.
That's my dorky non-tangible,
So is it fair to say that we are lukewarm on bacon?
Yeah, I mean, I'm lukewarm on nitrate positive bacon. I think it's probably fine. Not the terribly sourced kind, but I think if you get a good bacon source, it's fine to eat it pretty frequently. I mean, I do.
Or maybe I should say lukewarm on mass bacon consumption.
Yeah.
But that But that, yeah, again, if you're sourcing it well, if you are the type of person to go above and beyond,
yeah,
and you're sourcing it very well, that, you know, eat it with confidence, but maybe don't make it half of your day's consumption.
Yeah. I mean, if I was stuck on a deserted island and I got one animal, it'd be pig.
There you go.
Not beef. Because pig, you get ham, bacon, pork chops, tenderloin.
All right. Sorry. And they're super smart.
And they're fun. They're hilarious. All right, moving on.
Enough bacon.
So I'm going to answer a couple reader questions here in one. I get so many questions that say, you know, is a ketogenic diet good for X? Or is a paleo diet good for Y? In the last 2 weeks, there's been a ton of these and all these different very rare illnesses. And people always ask, you know, will this help? And there's clearly a bunch of illnesses out there where data is accumulating, like cancer, et cetera. But I've been getting myeloproliferative disorders, polycythemia vera. A couple people email me that have that. Wegener's, which is an inflammatory type issue. And then schwannomas. Like, I got a ton of schwannomas, which are these nervous, they're on your nerve cells. They make the myelin around your nerve cells. They're benign. They're slow growing. And actually, I've published a couple papers on them. They're like, I have a passion of mine, a dorky, weird, crazy passion, but they're treated with radiation. So anyway, we've discussed this before, but the point of this is, you know, there's a lot of disorders where you can't eat certain foods. Like, you know, if you can't process some amino acids, if you have PKU or something like that, you can't eat certain foods. If you have liver damage, you can't eat certain foods. Kidney damage, you have to be a little weary about some foods, protein, even though it's controversial. You know, if you don't have one of those kind of issues and it's something else, like Wegener's, which is a inflammatory disorder, you know, if the diet's healthy for you when you're not sick with one of these issues or disease-free or whatever you want to call it, odds are it's probably healthy for you with it. And if there's no good data on it, you just kind of have to go with the overriding theme that if it makes sense for everyone else, it probably makes sense for me. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I completely agree. I mean, there's... Again, I'll just piggyback on exactly what you said, because that's what I believe, that, you know, unless you have some sort of a condition where the condition defined is that you can eat certain foods, hey, that's one thing,
yeah.
You know, but if it's not a condition like that, then yeah, I mean, if we figure out the foods that were designed best to eat, you know, that we can process the best, then it's likely that will carry over.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I mean, you know, that's fine. Keep sending me the questions, because some of these things there is data for, but a lot of these very rare things, there's not going to be data. So it's just kind of eat the healthiest diet.
You know, I want to add something too. I think there are conditions out there that, the proper question, or maybe the reframe, is not only is it still good for you to eat that way, but it may be for certain conditions, even more imperative for you to eat that way, even more imperative for you to be stricter and to really watch what you're eating.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, a lot of these issues, we don't know if the diet affects it, but then we know being overweight does.
Yeah.
So you obviously want to eat the best diet to not be overweight. Like something like Wegener's, where it's inflammatory. I mean, Rob Wolf and those guys have talked at length about the paleo diet being less inflammatory or anti-inflammatory, et cetera.
You know, one of a neat conversation that I was able to have at Paleo FX from last March. When we arrived in Austin, we were driving in with Rob Wolf and Chris Kresser. So first of all, it was a great opportunity just to talk to those guys and hang out a little bit. Speaking of Chris Kresser, there you go.
Yeah.
And so I brought something up, and you know, I'm not mentioning any names, but I know somebody who has celiac disease, and they don't have the typical symptoms. So I have another buddy who has celiac disease, and if he eats gluten, it's over for him. I mean, the next couple of days of his life will be hell, right? But this person has celiac disease and none of those kinds of symptoms. Okay. So I brought this up. This person has been kind of resistant to completely remove gluten, right? Because there are none of those outward symptoms. And I talked to Rob and Chris about this and just asked what they thought. And it was like, you know, a red light went off, and Chris especially started to kind of go off on it and say, it's not all about the gut there. You know, it's about, there's so many other things. You know, it could rear its head in mood fluctuations. It could rear its head in so many different things outside of gut irritation. that there's just no doubt that if someone has full-blown celiac and they insist on consuming any level of gluten from that point on, that's a bad, bad thing.
Yeah.
So just thought I'd raise that anecdote in case there's anyone out there who has something and maybe doesn't have the traditional symptoms, that doesn't mean it's kosher to keep rolling along down that road.
Absolutely.
So, to pull it back to the point I was trying to make, I wanted to use that anecdote to support that if you do have certain conditions, it's all the more reason to really plunge in to the healthy dietary approach.
Absolutely. So what do you got?
All right. Article from Mark Sisson from Mark's Deli Apple, someone we refer to a decent amount. And I enjoyed this one being that he is a former triathlete, so he is well versed in, you know, long runs and such. Why you shouldn't was he a triathlete or just a marathoner?
I think it was a marathoner.
Yeah, marathoner. Either way, he's well versed in the pounding races and whatnot.
Yeah.
The article is entitled "Why You Shouldn't Burn More Than 4,000 Calories a Week Through Exercise." It's an interesting article, but I put it on here. I put it on today's docket because of one line. And we're fond of saying, and Dr. Champ, I know you're fond of saying, a calorie is not a calorie, right?
Yep.
So Mark Sisson had a gold play on that line. He said, a calorie expended is not a calorie expended. I thought that was fantastic. I thought it was well said. Same way, qualitatively, that when we eat one type of calorie, it's not the same as ingesting another type of calorie. A calorie of processed seed oil is going to do much different things to our body than a calorie of whole fresh organic avocado. It's just, they're going to do different things. In the activity side, that chronic cardio, as Mark Sisson likes to refer to, that pounding that pavement is going to do a lot, it's going to do something different to your body than, let's say, a smart lifting routine or a smart sprinting routine. They're just going to do different things. They will have different effects on the body. He quoted a lot of the usual culprits, some of the studies that we've referred to on this show, the epidemiological study where running more than 20 miles a week had a higher death rate, the study that we quoted a couple weeks ago, moderate exercise is very efficient at improving body composition, but excessive exercise has diminishing returns. He also quoted a study that caloric expenditures over 3,500 increases mortality rate. So a couple interesting things going on in that article. And another good point, good takeaway that he had himself was it's better to harness a variety of activities than just one. Again, going back, it's not, if someone's a runner out there, I get it, you're training for a race, but maybe you don't want all of your energy expenditure to come from just pounding the pavement, right? Yeah. Maybe you want to throw in some smart lifts. Maybe you want to throw in some smart sprints and diversify your range of activities. For that matter, throw in hikes and fun stuff as well. So I really appreciated that, and I wanted to send this one out heart to heart to some consistently overtraining clients out there, right? So again, he says, shouldn't burn more than 4,000 calories a week through exercise. Again, he does quote that study, caloric expenditures over 3,500. In that particular case, you started to see increased mortality rates. So
interesting.
If you are... Unless you're super passionate about, triathlons or something and you're training smart within that context and maybe you're exceeding this a little bit. All right. I get that. But if you're just training for health, but you're exercising, let's say 7 days a week and, burning an average of 6,000-7,000 calories a week.
Then you're not training for health.
That's perfect. That's well said. Then you're no longer training for health. And that's the point that I want to drive home because I know there are certain people in my life, certain clients in my life that I do the best I can in terms of smart programming, but I know that when they're not with me, they maybe have that overtraining itch, and it bugs me because I know that in the long run, they may be doing more harm than good. So that's what I got.
Good stuff. Takeaways.
Is that time?
It is that time.
Show's flying by.
Exercise.
What do you have?
So I am going to, in between my interviews this weekend, I'm going to Chicago to see my brother and his wife, driving down to Indianapolis to meet with Bill Hartman. And I'm going to link this. He does IFAST. He does assessments. I'm sure a lot of you guys heard of Bill Hartman. But anyway, talk about him a lot. My brother goes there. He does basically a full body assessment to see or deficient areas, if you're asymmetric, et cetera, then gives you a bunch of exercises. So he was nice enough to let us bring in the film crew and kind of see how it goes, interview him, et cetera. And by film crew, I mean my brother's flip camera. So we'll kind of see how it goes and post some of those videos. But yeah, really pumped about it. And I wanted to respond to someone sent me a question about the belly breathing, saying that if they try to do that, it makes them look like they're pregnant. And so I'm going to list an article here about apical expansion, and it's not just sticking your stomach out.
So this is back to the diaphragmatic breathing, right?
Back to the diaphragmatic breathing, yeah, which is helps my lower back pain. It's been a life changer for me. So I'm going to link this. This gives kind of some more explanations about assessing your breathing patterns, etc. And I will report back on my assessment down with Bill Hartman.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be a good time.
It's
right to get you down there.
Absolutely. I like that stuff. All right, so I'm looking forward to seeing what this expert film crew comes up with.
Yeah. Look, I can't vouch for the quality of the... it's not going to be HD, that's for sure. But it'll be good. It'll be good.
Fair enough. So we can look forward to that maybe on an episode fairly soon.
Yeah, hopefully soon, yeah.
That's great.
Once the film crew does the editing and all that.
Right. Who knows how long that will take.
Yeah. What do you got?
All right, for exercise today, I am going to start with a story, and then I'm going to add in an article from one of our favorite people. So the story goes like this. In one of the programs that I'm running right now, I'm working with this awesome guy, and I haven't asked him, so I'm not going to use any names, but he is an absolute rock star. He, you know, my dream as a trainer is... You know, I think highly of my own programming, right? I would hope that if you're a trainer that you think highly of your programming. Yeah. So, the thought process goes that I do believe that if someone comes in, that if they stick to what I give them, then they're going to do big things, right? And so he is my dream client in the sense that he's willing to kind of go to the ends of the earth to stick to the protocol. And that if I do, say, hey, hold up, maybe don't do so much. He's willing to listen to that as well. But here's the deal. In 4.5 short weeks, he lost 15 pounds in 4 weeks. 15 pounds in 4.5 weeks, right? Nice. It's a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Right? But he's cleaning up, you know, super duper clean eating, you know, hammering the workouts. The first 8 pounds of that is probably just water weight. You know what I mean? We're not talking about 15, you know, 15 real deal pounds, but there's no doubt. I mean, it's gone from like, you know, a 2-pack to a 4-6, you know what I mean? You're seeing lots of good things. And, the one concern that he had was that his bench press had only gone up a rep or two at his top weight. And my point back, first of all, that was only one exercise. I'm seeing lots of other exercises. Weights are going up. His performance is fantastic. Everything is going phenomenally. And he had that concern. And my response was, it's not necessarily in this case about purely how much weight you can put up. It's about your power to body weight or your body weight to power ratio. Right. If you lose 15 pounds, or let's say some of it's water weight and all that stuff, but if you lose a decent amount of weight and most of it is fat, right, and you're retaining your muscle, then it's okay to hold your lifts or to slightly improve your lifts. I mean, I'd argue that losing 15 pounds, looking and feeling great, and improving your bench press rep by one is a great, great thing.
I agree.
So that's my story. And then to pull in somebody else on this, we're going to pull in Keith Norris from Ancestral Momentum, great trainer from Austin, Texas that we bring in a lot. But he wrote an article called The Repeat Power Bias. And he talked about, you know, body weight power ratios. And so a quote here. Okay, so chalk this up to another in the long list of things that I'm confident of but cannot prove. That the power to body weight ratio, and specifically the ability to repeat these exertions over the long haul, is not only the best indicator of fitness that I know of, but also the best indicator of longevity. And yes, even a better indicator than is strength. So that, you know, if I'm looking to further support my case, I would definitely turn to an article like that. But again, context matters. As we say with everything here, context matters. Yeah. If you're dropping a lot of weight, make the goal to hold your lifts, maybe slightly improve them. But that's not the time to be looking to blow your lifts out of the water.
Yeah, a couple goals at a time.
Right, and maybe you
can. Maybe even one.
And right now, you know, Dr. Chan, one of your goals, right, is to put on a little weight, right? You had increased your caloric intake and all that good stuff. So maybe that's the perfect time to focus on increasing lifts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So context matters.
Exactly. It's hard to kind of do the opposite there.
Yeah.
But yeah. Absolutely. Good stuff.
What I got. How about nutrition, man? What do you have?
So my big nutrition thing, I go to Reading Terminal Market. I go to a farmer's market around here. And at Reading Terminal Market, I have my buddy there. I mean, he's the cheese man. He's like my cheese man. He's become my buddy. He knows what I like. And he knows I want grass-fed, no antibiotics, no et cetera, et cetera, and unpasteurized. I want it raw. And I walk by. Half the time, I walk by him first to go to the other place, and he's always like, hey, I got this for you. And it's so great, and it gets back to kind of, we talk about farmer's market, going out and hunting, you know, hunting and gathering your food. And I think we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the cooperation with like the hunter-gatherer societies, and we're talking about the, whatchamacallit, in Africa. Blanket.
The Maasai.
Yeah. And it was just pretty cool, because it's like, we're in this together. He's helping me out. He knows exactly what I want. And it makes it just so much more interesting for me. And it just made me really think, you know, if you can have people out there that help you, especially people complain a lot about how much it costs and the time that it takes to get your food, et cetera. You know, I have a cheese man. He has three cheeses ready for me when I walk by, I taste them. I have, my beef guy, same thing. I just email him and he shows up. There's a farmer's market across the street from me on Thursdays. He shows up there with exactly what I want. It just really makes your life easier. It's cool for them because you're paying the same people each week. So it's nice for them and they're giving you a good product. So it's really, really been a life changer for me. And that is kind of my takeaway, you know, get out there and, find someone like that and add it to your kind of repertoire.
I think it's a great takeaway. I think it just speaks to, I think, the philosophy that we share, that, I know you talk a lot about, how we used to spend a lot of time on food gathering and we used to spend more time on cooking and maybe more of our budgets towards, you know, acquiring food anyway.
Yeah.
So if we place a premium on these things and if these things are important to us, then yeah, finding those trusted sources that, hey, maybe that even helps cut the cost down, you know, finding those dedicated sources.
Does. He hooks me up too.
Yeah.
So everyone kind of makes out.
You know, so everyone talking out there about paleo on budget and those kinds of things, maybe finding your own, you know, cheese man or your own beef man or whatever. Like we talk about the cow shares here all the time.
Yep.
Finding that stuff and buying it a little more bulk will really help, you know, ease the impact on the wallet.
Yep. Absolutely.
So awesome. I like that a lot, man.
Thanks. See, I can throw out some tangibles as well.
No doubt. Never said
Roger.
You could. Never said you could.
What did you got?
All right. So I guess I am the negative guy today. So my nutritional takeaway is I want to pass along a very in-depth article on the dark side of wheat. In fact, that's the title of the article, The Dark Side of Wheat. This was, I believe I found it first through Rob Wolf. This is kind of getting batted around today in the community, but it's from a site called Green Med Info by a guy named, I'm going to butcher this, but I want to say Sayer G. That's my crack at it. That's my crack at it, but we're going to link it. And you'll be able to see this article in its entirety, and you know, extra points to anyone who takes this down in full.
Not short.
My favorite part of the article, so it's The Dark Side of Wheat. It's basically all about how wheat is not the best thing since sliced bread, right? And my favorite part is this quote: "If we view celiac disease is gluten intolerance, right? And we mentioned some celiac cases earlier this episode." But quote, if we view celiac disease not as an unhealthy response to a healthy food, but as a healthy response to an unhealthy food, classical celiac disease symptoms like diarrhea may make more sense. I really like that philosophy. I'm not suggesting that someone who has celiac disease feels lucky or should feel lucky. I'm not suggesting that at all. They do have more, generally speaking, more digestive issues to deal with than myself or than maybe you, although I feel like I do have a touch of gluten sensitivity, but certainly not full blown celiac disease. So I'm not suggesting that you should feel lucky if you have celiac disease, but I do appreciate that line of thought that maybe having celiac disease is your body's way of saying don't eat this, and protecting yourself. Whereas somebody else who has limited gluten sensitivity may never have those overt signs, may go on eating gluten, and may do themselves long-term damage.
It's a good point. It's a great point.
So that was my favorite takeaway from this article. If you are a glutton for wheat punishment, you can also read, it has a big section on adverse effects of wheat. It gives 6 things. Lots of them we've talked about on the show. Just real quick to go down the list. Number 1, wheat causes damage to the intestines. No surprise there. 2, wheat causes intestinal permeability. Very similar thing. No surprise there. Number 3, wheat has pharmacologically active properties. We talked about this one.
Yep.
Right? So, quote, it may fulfill our hunger while generating a repetitive, ceaseless cycle of craving more of the same, and by doing so, enabling the surreptitious control of human behavior. So, this is definitely a daunting article. Number 4, wheat causes damage that affects distant organs, not just the intestines. Number 5, wheat induces molecular mimicry, so it may actually initiate an immune response against self. And number 6, wheat contains high concentrations of excitotoxins, which are natural flavor enhancers that may contribute to neurodegenerative conditions. So we won't get too much more into wheat today. You know our stance on it, but this is a great article to read.
It's funny too, because the whole food reward theory, I think wheat pretty much bypasses that. I mean, I used to scoop the center out of white bread when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I could eat 500 pieces. It doesn't have some crazy great flavor. It's pretty bland. It doesn't taste like anything.
It's true.
And it just turns me into a madman.
Yeah.
It's that time.
It is that time. Bring it on. The caveman corner.
All right. I'll start us out here. My big thing, first and foremost, a lot of responses about the news, and it's been great. I just got one girl said she's stopped watching the news, working out quicker, which Roger discussed a couple weeks ago. I mean, we discussed it a lot, and just has extra hours in the week, and it's great to hear. So many people said, wow, it's been great not watching the news because it's the same thing over and over again. So good to hear. Keep up the good work. You know, try a month now without, see how you feel. But along those lines, it is a change of season, and it's getting cold. It's getting cold where we are, at least, maybe not for all you guys. And that now I find it's one of the most challenging times for working out. The spring, spring's clearly the easiest. It's getting warmer out. You're getting ready for the beach. It is really tough now. And actually in my interview, yesterday, the awesome doctor that's, the paleo guy, he was talking about this, and he does CrossFit, and his big thing now is increasing his squats. And he was saying, you know, he's like, at my age, but really I think it's for anyone. He said, at my age, you know, you need a goal. You can't just go work out. And we're talking about getting patients to work, specifically getting breast cancer patients to work out. What can we do? And Roger and I have been discussing this as well. We're trying to figure out some kind of workout regimens that could get women to do it, ideally at home, but we don't know if that's going to work. And that's kind of what we're talking about, where you just need to have some kind of goal, some kind of motivation, something to push for, even if you have to make it up. And so my big thing, which I've been talking about, is I'm trying to gain about 3 to 5 pounds of muscle, which I assume will probably be about 3 pounds if I'm lucky. So I'm trying to put on 3 pounds by February. So I've been pushing my workouts, been pushing my diet. And do I need to really put 3 pounds of muscle on? Probably not. It doesn't change anything. But I need to have some goal, especially right now. I mean, today was just one of the toughest days of work I've had in a while. And I went in the gym and tore it up. And I knew there was just no way I could do that unless I had some kind of goal. So that's my big takeaway. So for all you guys out there struggling, all you girls out there struggling, just make up a goal, just figure something out. And my last thing to say is, you know, we talked a lot about bacon filling you up, etc. And I've been not eating well all week because I've just been so full from devouring the Eagles last week.
I thought we were going to make it the entire episode without getting to that.
And from Michael Vick just coughing up the football. Good Lord. I mean, we were not very good, but you guys stunk. We're not going to even make the playoffs probably, but our offense should be scoring 40 points a game. Anyway, sorry, listeners. I had to get one thing in there.
Hey, I have to just shut up and take it. What can I say? We lost.
We didn't watch it together for obvious reasons, and we were kind of texting, and then the game got bad, and You were texting, I was saying, then I just stopped responding, and then you just like stopped. It was like pretty obvious at one point. We were both disgusted with the entire game.
We were done with it.
But anyway, whatever. So, so I had to say something.
I thought it would come in the beginning, and you tricked me. I thought we would make it out of the episode without it, but
it took me. It was hard to not say anything.
Yeah,
it was hard to keep it to myself. But anyway, what do you got?
So I want to real quick reply to something. I got some of the flip side this week. I got some negative feedback on the news, and I think it's worthwhile to talk about. The feedback that I got from a couple different people was, you know, why would you recommend not watching the news during a national election? And I think it's a fair point, right? It at least is a point that warrants more consideration. My take on it is this. I don't believe, and I support you. I do not watch the news on a regular basis. I do not think it's worthwhile, right? So here's my take on the whole national election and not watching the news during. I don't believe that watching the news will teach you anything useful about the election. I think if you're concerned about national politics, and I'm certainly not the one to tell you you shouldn't be, right? I say if that's something that you're concerned about, if that's something you're passionate about, more power to you. My question is this. Can you get more applicable knowledge about the two major candidates running for the nation's office from 1 hour of focused nonpartisan research or 10 or 20 hours of mainstream news media? I'd argue that one single hour of nonpartisan research into the candidates themselves will tell you far more than listening to the news parrot on about silliness.
100%. Now is the best time to not be watching the news.
So,
or any TV, because all you see is these stupid commercials where they're bashing each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Painful.
So again, I want to challenge that line of thinking. I get why you would say that. I get why you would say, hey, not watching the news during a national election is silly. I get it. I understand where you're coming from. But I'm going to challenge you right back. Cut the amount of news watching time. Let's say you do 20 hours every month. 20 hours of news watching every month. Divide that by 10. 2 hours. Proactively research your candidates. You'll come out of that month more knowledgeable than having watched that 20 hours of news media.
And while you're at it, look up what each president that we've had, what their one of their main platforms were, and look and see if that actually happened.
Well, that's yeah,
pretty interesting. And look and see the difference between the two when it comes out percentages from the things that are changed. It's interesting. Yeah. Just give it a look.
Yeah. But again, that proactive habit will put you ahead of the game in my eyes. All right. Anyway, back to the Relentless Report. That was just some random tangent. My Relentless Report is going to build on yours. I'm doing some more piggybacking. All right.
All right.
But I think it's worthwhile. I am huge on goals. Huge, huge, huge goals. I mean, those transformation programs that I run here, I see it all the time. I really, really push people that after the program is done, you've got to set some goal, something. It can be small, medium, or large, but you've got to set some goal. If you walk out of an intense program, an intense dietary regimen, an intense exercise regimen, whatever it is, if you walk out of it and just go like this, not gonna like what happens when you look back at that a month later. If you walk out and you say, hey, I'm so happy with where I am right now, now it's time to focus on blank, you're gonna be thrilled. So resetting that focus is huge. And so for us, because this is such a tough time for the both of us, we actually set up a little trip that we'd like to tell you about.
Jamaica. Vacation to Jamaica.
Yeah, no. We wish, right? We
not
wish.
At all.
So 5 weeks from now, you know, you're going through a brutal stretch at work, a brutal stretch where you're flying out for a whole bunch of interviews. I'm going through a brutal stretch right now where I'm running two transformation programs. 5 weeks from now, that's going to be done. And what we decided to do was remove ourselves from the hustle and write a book. So it's not like a vacation. I guess it's not really a vacation.
We made sure we're going to have strict scheduling, and we made sure there's a couple activities in there.
Yeah. But so here's the deal. 5 weeks from now, we're skipping town. We're going to take, you know, some of these tangible takeaways, some of the science, some of this usable information, and we're actually going to make something out of it. And we're pretty stoked about it.
really pumped about it.
And so we envision it as a project where we tackle a large number of topics, right? Like a topically oriented book. And so what we want your help. Now, if you're listening at this point of the episode, you know, we thank you, right? Because I'm sure some people have already tuned out at this point.
Yeah.
But for those of you who are still listening, here's the help we would like. So we already have a long list of topics that we are going to put in this book. But we would like to leave 10 topics to your choice, basically. We'd like you, hey, hit us up. You know, some of you contact Dr. Champ. Some of you contact me. Some of you contact both of us. Any way is fine. Hit us up and let us know what are 1, 2, 5, 10, whatever, however many topics you want to list. What are topics that you would like to see us include in this book? And what we'll do are the 10 most popular topics that you all, guys and gals, get to us, we will put in this book and we will cover.
Sounds good. You're scaring me, but
dude, you're
it's out in the open. We got
now. There's nowhere to go. We got it right.
So, yeah, stay tuned on that. We've been pseudo throwing this thing together for a while anyway.
Yeah.
Realistically, but yeah.
So this is more the concerted effort to finalize and to, you know, a little more creation, but a lot of finalization.
And a lot of it too is we get so many questions about, can you discuss this? I'm trying to get X person to change their ways, and this would maybe help them listen to it. So that's kind of why we're doing this book. Like, people need a tangible item to open up, to look at, to say, oh yeah, that makes sense. And we're kind of hoping this can provide that, similar to what we hope the podcast provides, but.
Yep, absolutely. So just like we appreciate your feedback to the podcast, and we love when you do send in those questions, because it really helps those questions. It helps guide us as to what we talk about. You know, like this week, for example, a bunch of you sent in that Chris Kresser article.
Yeah,
a lot of you. And so we talked about it. You know, we enjoy that process, that banter with you guys. So send in the topics that you absolutely want to see written about, and we will absolutely do so.
Sounds good, man. Another one in the bag.
It's episode 21. So, hey, next week is episode 22. 22 is my favorite number. So,
oh my God, it's going to be crazy.
We didn't do anything special for 20.
No, we lied, so we would. But 22 is going to be off the chains, crazy. Have a good week, everyone. Go Steelers.
Come on, man. Now you got me all. Anyway, all right, I am Relentless Roger. You can find me on relentlessroger.com. Listen to the episode there and shoot me a question or the topics you want to see us cover. This is Dr. Colin Champ. You can find him on cavemandoctor.com. Same thing. And as always, you can find us on iTunes. See you next week.
Take care.